Hey, it's Matt here again from the Multi-Day Podcast by Tourpreneur. Pleasure to be here once more, especially because I'm sitting here with Natalia from our team. Hi, Natalia.
Hi, Matt.
Welcome to the show. Do you want to tell us a couple of things about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so I'm the Chief of Staff here at Leatherback Travel, and I do quite a bit of the hiring and some HR, financial modeling, things like that. Yeah, I've been on the team for about a year now. In January, that's exciting.
Cool. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, congratulations on a year. We are doing a series on leadership challenges when it comes to travel. And I thought the best thing would be to get some of our leadership team to talk through that with us, especially Natalia, because Natalia is someone who doesn't have much of a public-facing role with our company besides talking to candidates, right? But has made a significant contribution to our company. And so we are going to be talking about one of my favorite concepts that we use internally a lot, which is known as Grey Ooze. Natalia, can you tell us a little bit about Grey Ooze? What is it from your perspective?
Yeah, I think Grey Ooze, the best way is kind of just to like imagine it. It's all that, all the muckiness, all of that, like if you had Grey Ooze in your kitchen, it'd be all of that like dirt and stuff that wouldn't let you cook, right? It would block your process. And so in the work, kind of, you know, doing your work or in a company, there's a lot of things that delay processes, that make them dirty, that make them messy, that make it annoying. And so I think in a bit of a broad sense, it's easy to imagine the gray ooze.
It's the stuff that gunks up your day.
Find it. Yeah.
Right. It's all that stuff that just gunks up your day. Sometimes it's obvious and sometimes it's less obvious, right?
Doesn't let things flow.
Yeah, well, this is actually another episode topic, but yeah, it's what basically gets in the way of flow. It's what creates struggle. But sometimes grey ooze is flow, but done poorly, right? Not all flow is good flow, right? So if someone has a bad, like coming back to your kitchen analogy, if someone has a bad cutting technique, right? And they chop vegetables like 3 times as slow as they could, then
that
person...
They're cutting themselves all the time, but...
Yeah. Well, that's like an obvious struggle, right? But like, I think a non-obvious one is if you just got a bad technique, so you're taking
right.
more time than you should, but because it's comfortable to you, you don't quite see it and realize that it's gray ooze that's holding you up. But if you would just reassess your technique and invest 30 minutes into fixing your technique, you could eliminate tons of gray ooze from your vegetable chopping.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to tell you a bit of a gray ooze story that happened to me the other day. Just to help illustrate what grey ooze is and the way you think about it and the way you approach it. So I was buying a coffee the other day. And it was like a little coffee shop that I go into regularly. And I was ordering a takeaway latte, right? And so first ooze is I go to the counter to order and they're not at the counter. And then someone else kind of sidles up. Instead of standing behind me, they kind of sidle up next to me to order, right? So the first news is that the person comes to the counter to order, but they're not sure who's meant to be ordering because the other person is not standing behind me,
right?
So there's a bit of confusion, right? And a bit of a delay, right? A bit of tension for all three parts. But I kind of asserted myself and started ordering. So that's the first one. And then, you know, I order and then I'm waiting for my coffee. And then the other person who's ordered for her and her friend is waiting for a coffee. And then the barista puts out one coffee. Right. And everyone, both of us just assume it's for me because I ordered one, the other person ordered two. And she's like, and then she goes, oh, that's for you, for the other lady. But she wasn't taking it because like, she was like hesitating as if like, has she got this wrong? She didn't like look at me and say, your one's coming up soon, like knowing that I ordered first. Right. So that's the second ooze is like, again, it's another confusion and it could have been solved by simple communication. Just looking at me is that, your one's coming up next, right? And then so it turns out what she decided to do is that she decided to batch my one with the other one because she had to make, I think, one flat white and two lattes. So she made the flat white first and then made the lattes and then split gave me my latte and gave the other lady her latte, right? So that's what happened. Anyway, third thing that happens is they don't give you, there's one of these coffee shops, it's happening a bit nowadays in Australia. I'm not sure about overseas, but some people are not putting lids on the coffee. You have to put the lid on yourself. And it's not like a Starbucks situation, by the way. So we're talking like legitimate, like actual coffee, right? And so we're not talking about like just to people's imaginations. We're not talking about like big supersized cups of whatever the heck they serve in Starbucks. We're talking about like a proper coffee cup, right? Anyway, so they tell you, they're like, so both of us were like, where's the lids? And she's like, oh, lids are on the other side. So get this, the lids are on the other side. It's a small coffee shop, but lids on the other side of the coffee shop, right? So we had to cross the coffee space, right? Which is wasted, just wasted like effort, right? And then because they filled the coffee to the very, very brim, I spilled a little bit of it because I'm not the world's most coordinated human being. I struggle to carry my coffee. That's why we have lids. And so I spilled a bit of coffee. So there you go. We have an error that's come in, right? I've spilled coffee on the ground and there's wasted effort because they have to clean up the coffee. And then I put it on myself, and because I'm not that good at that. Like I'm not an experienced coffee lid putter on, or I did okay, but yeah, a bit of wasted effort. But like all these little things, all I have to do is kind of put themselves in the customer's position and watch it, and put their ooze goggles on, and they would discover so many little ooze moments from them, from the design of the counter where it's not quite clear how you're meant to queue up, right, to the coaching of the barista to be a bit more mindful of the mindsets of people and be proactively communicating, to the putting the lids on the other side of the coffee shop. Imagine if it was busy. Like that's actually normally quite a busy coffee shop. It wasn't busy when I was there, but imagine having to push through people, push around people to get to the lid when you have a full cup of coffee that you're worried about spilling.
Well, the full process, I feel like if you add one more person, it sounds like you would have taken a long time to get your coffee.
Right. Yeah, it's all...
It would have just been much messier.
Right, it's all been easy.
This story is one of those things where it's like, I feel like if I would have heard it a year or so ago, I would have been like, yeah, normal experience at a coffee shop. Well, at least while I live in Costa Rica, so it feels very normal here sometimes. But now it's like, oh, that sounds so painful. It sounds so oozy. It sounds so like oozy. Something that you just kind of want to go and like, can I nicely help fix this?
Yeah.
Because, like, not because, you know, not because I'm an expert or anything, but just because it's like, there has to be a better way for this to work, for this flow, for people to kind of get a better experience.
Right. I love that expression. Like, we use that, we say something's oozy, right, when a process is a bit broken or it's a bit wobbly. Yeah. And our team now, we're getting much better at having those ooze goggles on where we're in a place and we can just see grey ooze all over the place, right? So we have been working on a list of oozes, and I'm just going to take a little bit of a sidebar here. People who are listening to this, some people might be familiar with the concept of lean manufacturing and lean in general. If you're recognizing some of the terminology that has come up so far, yes, this idea is inspired by lean. But what we found is that lean is very specific to manufacturing, especially in physical environments. And what we're doing is we're adapting some of those ideas to a remote travel company. I think the ideas of Great Ooze can be pretty well applied to pretty much any company that works remotely using knowledge-based work, right? So we've got six oozes that we're working on, we're defining. It's not easy. It's obviously something that we're working through still. But what we're going to do is share the first three that we have on our list. And then later we'll record another episode with the final three. And I'll give some tips and tricks on that episode as to how to, you know, get people's head in gear around what Great Ooze is. Some tricks around really quick ways to discover ooze, including some technology that can help you find it, even if you're struggling to find it. But let's get into the oozes, I reckon. So, Natalia, the first one is waiting.
Yeah, I feel like waiting with your coffee shop example is very easy to kind of see, but there's a lot of waiting that goes on in a, you know, digital remote company. Either if it's, you know, time zone delays, so you send a message to someone and you wait to hear back, and, you know, maybe they work in a different time. Some companies don't work. They work a bit more asynchronous, so that could also be a bit of waiting there. And then also, I think waiting when you don't have an answer for a customer, and there's waiting, just a lot of different kind of
Right.
You know.
So let's drill down. Let's get specific. So what would be an example of waiting from our perspective?
Yeah, I think...
Wait to a customer when it comes to a customer.
Like I mentioned, for a customer, so if they have a specific question about a trip and our trip manager doesn't have that answer, and so they have to go to our booking team or if they go to the supplier and wait to get the answer and then get back to the guest, get back to the customer. I think with like project management, assigning a task to someone or someone working on a task and getting a few minutes in and realizing, yeah, they have a ton of questions that they need someone else to answer. Waiting for those answers, things like that, any kind of tech related, you know, delays.
Right.
Yeah, yep. Those are the few that I can think of.
Yeah, so waiting, it's something that on the surface sounds quite obvious, but there's probably a lot more waiting in your business. When I say your business, I'm not referring to you, Natalia, I'm referring to the listener, then you'd realize. And I think our team didn't realize just how much there is. And I think when it hasn't really fully sunken in how much there is. So we use Slack as our internal communications tool, which is it's an internal chat tool. And I was basically trying to help the team understand every single time someone asks a question in Slack, that's Grey Ooze. Because that means, because someone's sitting around waiting for that response to come in. Our customers, even waiting for something that's legitimate to wait for, right? So waiting, let's just say you're waiting for a receipt. It's not great. There's no mistake in the fact that you need a receipt, but you're waiting. And waiting is wasted time and it is ooze. So we want to work to eliminate waiting as much as possible. So what would be let's just think, like, what would be a couple of examples of how we're eliminating waiting? I'm going to put one first. And one is that we've got a supplier portal that we've recently created where we work with a lot of DMCs all over the world, and to save them from having to wait for a response to find out how many booking people have booked in or the names of this and that person, or maybe they need to know the passport country of each person booked, they can just log in and see the progress of their trip. So we have suppliers who, just out of curiosity, they love logging in every single week to see how their bookings are going. The main purpose of the portal was to, well, there's actually quite a few cross purposes, I would say, but one of the big oozes that we're helping to eliminate by creating the portal is eliminating the waste, the ooze of waiting, by just knocking out a whole bunch of emails and allowing them to just see the response they need straight away. So that's an example of how we've reduced waiting. What were you going to say, Natalia?
I think another way we reduce waiting is we've done a lot more training with our booking team, or like trip handover. So once the trip design team, you know, they're ready to launch a trip or we're relaunching maybe a new date, they meet up with the trip manager and the booking manager and kind of go through the full trip, answer any questions, go into the details. And so that way, ideally, the booking manager has most of the answers that they need to the questions that, you know, might come up, and working on creating a bit more of a, just in our systems, like a bit more of information, of almost like an encyclopedia of information about each trip, so that we have, it's not like every time trip manager is working on launching a trip, selling a trip, they're not going back and asking the same questions that they asked a year ago, maybe. Right. So I think that's a big kind of, that reduces waiting quite a bit.
Another thing we've worked a lot on is automations. So Airtable is our primary system of choice and has 50 automations included on our plan. And we've actually run up against that limit of 50. So we're probably going to upgrade our plan soon, but we're using Zapier to do a lot of automations. We're using automations within Slack as well. We also, one of our team members has learned about Airtable scripting. And that means basically coming up with custom scripts that can reduce the need for automations. Well, I'll rephrase this. It can reduce the need to use Airtable's automation tool by automating using scripts. And that also saves a lot of time. Cool. So let's move on to the next ooze, which is errors. So this is
another one that's feels obvious, but there could be some hidden ones.
Well, the thing about errors is that it feels obvious on the surface.
Yeah.
But the impact of errors is something that I think a lot of people underestimate, right? So if someone makes a small mistake, they often think, oh, it's just a small mistake, right? I don't have to take it seriously. I don't need to spend 8 hours of time fixing this process. But I'll give you an example where we had an error happen a few times, and it meant it caused incredible amounts of wasted time. So we've had this error happen a couple of times where a customer has sent over their documentation, or thinks they sent over the documentation. So it's a bit of a mix of error types. So in some cases, they think they sent their documentation over and they haven't. Or they have, and it's just somehow got lost in the mix. And so what that means is that we have had team members, because they're aware of this error, every time they've been sending an email asking for documentation, they've been going back through every single email communication to make sure that we actually haven't received their documentation.
Right.
So errors don't just have errors. They also have knock-on effects as well. So we have been working on a system. I don't know if you've been interacting much with this.
It's painful to like, not. It's not just the error. It's the manually double-checking, triple-checking. Mm-hmm. And when it's a task that you're doing several times a day, that's, you know, it's a ton of time.
So can you think of any examples of errors besides not logging customer documents properly?
Yeah, well, I think anywhere where you can put in information, data, you know, errors there are very, very easy to make and, you know, very common and a lot of the time very painful. And at the same time, same kind of example, like trying to avoid those errors is also very, can be very painful, right? Like having... creating systems where there's quality checks for, you know, I don't know, let's say guest information, passport checks, all of these things that vary. I've been working on some like financial modeling, and if I have an error on the first one I do, the first example, that's going to replicate to all the rest of the ones I'm working on, right? All the rest of the months, for example. And so how do I get that first one right? So I don't waste a ton of time fixing the next, you know, 6 months because I mean, error one.
So Yusuf, on that exact example, if we have an error in our financial data, that's going to lead us to potentially make an incorrect decision based on the error. So that's an example of a flow-on effect from an error. We might think that trips are more profitable than they are.
Yeah, and having errors on our website too. Sorry, I jumped there a little bit, but having an error on our website where, you know, a guest, I don't know, if they see the trip maybe has a different price than the actual price, or I don't know, we didn't update information. There's a ton of different things that could happen, but all of that create false expectations, I guess, you know. And so all those things, just kind of small issues, but have quite a bit of, like, the ripple effects.
Yeah. So one thing I'll talk about, it's worth talking about a little bit, is methods to reduce errors. And I think that's going to be it's an entire episode, because we've created this system that we're currently calling Pac-Man. Well, basically, our trip operations team is going through an error that's happened, or if they have the time to go through a couple of errors, and thinking about how all the different ways to mitigate that, right? So as a team, we're becoming quite good at... I did a presentation to the team the other day where I was listing out not just fixes we've come up for errors, but, and for great ooze in general, but categories of fixes that we've come up with. And I think I was able to list out 25, 26 different types of ways to fix great use in terms of the actual tactics, right? Like such as, you know, Airtable automations. But one of these techniques is called Pokeyoki. Now, have you interacted much with Pokeyoki yet in our systems?
Not in our system, not too much.
Not really. Okay, so Pokeyoki, and I'll give one example of how we were able to really knock an error out using a really simple Pokeyoki. So Pokeyoki comes from Japanese, it comes from Lean, and it's, the idea is that you're trying to make a system more visual so that it is harder to make a mistake. So I'll give you an example from Toyota, because Toyota is like the granddaddy of this whole thing, right? So Toyota, I was watching a YouTube video about Toyota, and they had this issue where it was taking them a lot of time to wrench certain like bolts on. And so they were like, okay, let's save time. That's a news. By using this automated wrench bolter things. Automated.
The technical term. Yep.
automated bolting machines, right? And so they're kind of hanging down from, you know, like you go to a bar and they've got these water thing. They can fill up the water. They can just pull the water in and fill up your cup like that. Saves time. Well, it's kind of like that. They were kind of hanging from the ceiling so they don't have to reach as much and they can just put it on right there. But the problem is because they weren't using their hands to do it, it caused additional errors because they were setting loose bolts down to the next person. So they need to figure out a way. How do we tell someone, if you've lost that ability to sense it with your hand, how do you show someone that the bolt is loose? And so they came up with a color system. So the machine, it's red, flashing red while you're doing it, and then it turns green when it's tight enough, and then you send it down. So it's a really, really simple color system, but saving incredible amounts of ooze. So on our side, we were having an issue a couple of times where we were trying to process single supplements for people, but our operations team was missing in some cases that there was a single supplement. And part of the reason was, well, we looked at it. We did the Pac-Man and we analyzed the process, and it became quite obvious that the single supplement checkbox was kind of buried and it was too easy to miss. And so we decided the best thing to do was to automate this part of the process to remove all human error. But we decided while we wait for us to automate this, we just reorganize the fields in Airtable. So when you look at the booking, you don't have to scroll to see that it's a single supplement. It's actually the very first thing that you see, right? So that's a really, really simple example of Pokeyoki introducing a visual control so that it is more difficult to make an error. Another example of a Pokeyoki that we haven't brought in that we're going to bring in is if someone emails through and the system recognizes their name and says, hey, this is actually someone who's actually a customer already. So you wouldn't be emailing back to them and saying, hello, welcome to Patch Adventures. It's nice to meet you. You'd be like, hey, Jen, hope you're doing well. I can see you come with us a couple of times, so I'll just give you the brief rundown of how this trip works or whatever, right? So you know how it goes. We need to have a call with you. What's the best time or whatever? Like you can reduce errors by the simple fact of having information automatically appear at the right time.
Like when you're filling out a form, it has like the visual of what your answer should look like.
Totally. That's a really good example of Pokeyoki. Or, you know, when you're filling out the password thing and it won't let you submit a password because it doesn't meet the criteria.
Yeah.
Now, that's a painful example because often it's a little bit user hostile. But overall, with errors, what we should be doing is logging them. So we have an incident log where we log errors as they come through. Then they get teed up for discussion in our Pac-Man chats, where Pokeyoki is just one example of a solution type. And then we're trying to come up with a solution and then allocate someone to fix it. Now, this particular system we've been working on for a few months in terms of calling it Pac-Man was what I've realized is, okay, you need to have, number one, ooze goggles. Number two, you need to be logging incidents and in a disciplined way. And this is probably one of the hardest bits of the process, I'd say, Natalia, because it's a bit unnatural to call attention to a mistake you've made if you've made a mistake.
Yeah. Well, I want to highlight something out of everything that you're saying, which is this is a team effort. Everything that you're talking about is a team effort. It's not, you know, sometimes it's like there's managers who are doing quality assurance and like checking other people's work and they'll point out the errors. It's like, no, everyone pointing out your own errors, pointing out errors you see, you know, in a document, systems, anything. It's a team-wide effort to log.
Totally.
For example, in the incident log, and not just to log it, but then, like you mentioned, the trip ops meeting, trying to Pac-Man process, that's a group effort. You know, it's not just, I don't know, me looking at the process or someone else looking at the process saying, oh, I think this is the solution that will work for you.
Right.
And I know maybe nothing about what the actual issue is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I should mention that the reason I'm using our trip operations team a lot as an example is because that's front of mind because we're working a lot together on creating these advanced processes. But our trip design team has also been working on processes and adding their own Pokeyokis and checklists as well. Checklist is the C in Pac-Man. And what they've been doing is working on checklists to check, because we've had errors, for example, with the wrong dates going live onto the site and people booking our trips based on the wrong date and such and so on. So that is the second ooze. And we'll talk about Pac-Man and resolutions and all that sort of stuff in a future episode. I'll probably bring in someone from our operations team, I reckon, to talk about that. What do you reckon?
Pac-Man experts.
Yeah, we get the Pac-Man experts in. And the reason, by the way, the reason it's called Pac-Man, that was like, because I like the idea of, you know, the Pac-Man, the computer game where it goes around eating the monsters or the ghosts. For me, that felt perfect. As soon as I was making this acronym and I was like, I realized I was close to Pac-Man, I was like, oh, this is going to be too good. And then I started kind of force fitting the acronym. But it's working. It is working. So
going around eating those.
It's going around eating the ooze. And it is a lot of work, but as they say, lean is, it's hard work that makes things easy, right? Every single time we do this, we reduce a little bit of struggle, we reduce a little bit of pain, we increase trust as well in our teams.
Well, dealing with errors is also a lot of work.
Yeah.
Like waiting and all of the, just kind of dealing with them and mudding through them is a lot of work. So I think it's better to kind of face them head on and fix it then.
Totally. You're having a busy day and your day is partly busy because of all this who's, right? And it's like, I don't have time to get into this. When I clear the decks, and as you know, Natalia, as I like to say, the decks are never clear, right?
But,
never clear.
Like you said, yeah, our team gains trust. And also, we're actively helping them have a more enjoyable job because they don't have to go into work every day just saying, oh, I'm going to have to deal with a whole bunch of issues. You know, the ideal is every day there's less issues. And there's different issues. There's not the same issues that you were working through a year ago.
But this is something that's worth drilling in on. You do have different issues and new issues that pop up. But if you hadn't have dealt with the other ones previously, it would be completely overwhelming dealing with these new ones, right? That's the first thing. The second thing is that the new issues take on a bit more sort of, they feel more important and prominent than maybe they would previously, because previously they would just get lost in the mix of all the other issues.
Right.
But I'm trying to think. There was a, we've been having, one of the issues we've been having recently is around single supplements, right? Like, how exactly should we manage people who want to upgrade on the road? There's been a lot of discussion about it. There's been a bit of ooze around it. We've made mistakes. But the fact we're able to dedicate so much time to fixing this issue, which is a slightly esoteric issue, not that many people want to upgrade to a private room while on the road.
Right.
But the fact we could get so much time into perfecting this process is for the simple reason that we've invested so much time in perfecting our other process.
And that we've spent a lot of time becoming aware of all of this, because if not, maybe we wouldn't even notice. We'd be like, oh, everything's going great.
And
under the deck, everything's, I'm terrible at metaphors, so I'll steal some of yours and try to make them work.
Right.
Let's under the deck. Everything is falling apart and the ship is actually going to sink.
Right. I think that was pretty good. But this is actually a perfect excuse to segue into our next ooze, which is actually one we're working on right now. We haven't fully got it clarified, which is ironic given what I'm just about to say, right? Because it's muddiness, right? So the third ooze is muddiness/confusion/lack of clarity. We're still working out the name. But there's a few ways that this can manifest. The first one is people misunderstanding instructions, right? Or wasting time spending additional time reading something because they don't understand it. A system that takes additional clicks to understand what I'm looking at. A system where I have to go digging through all sorts of stuff to get information, and it means that I'm not having necessarily the clarity that I need. That's one example. But another example of muddiness is where you don't even realize there's an issue because it's not being surfaced because of the lack of clarity.
Right.
So an example of that would be there's some sort of metric that if you were to track it, you would actually significantly improve your business, but you haven't been able to figure out, even identify that metric yet.
I think it's related to finances and even like team management. There's can be quite a bit of that. If there isn't a bit of structure, if there isn't a bit of, like you said, either following certain metrics or just, it, you know, it depends, but there could be quite a bit of muddiness that makes it really hard to make decisions, you know.
Sure. What would be an example of yours on your side in terms of how moneyness has affected you?
So we have, like, our team is remote, works flexible hours, and across a few time zones. And so I think expectations, for example, have to be very clear so that the team can have the flexibility, because we're not, you know, if not, it's very easy to lean into either just kind of chaos or like micromanaging. And we don't want to do any of those. And so how do we have kind of the structure that's needed, the clarity that's needed, so everyone knows what they have to do, when they have to do it, you know, all of the expectations, and then they just have the freedom to do that instead of there being a bit of like, well, maybe I can do this, maybe I can't.
Yeah, so prioritization.
Maybe,
right?
This is my rule, maybe it's not.
Yeah, so, well, that's a really good example, being prioritization. What is the actual priority right now? And so we have been rolling out what to help combat the muddiness around prioritization?
Oh, rocks.
Yeah. So what's...
Yeah,
what's
like, what if, there's a few things.
Yeah, there's been a lot of things. Yeah. You're trying to figure out which one I'm referring to. But yeah,
rocks.
You nailed it. You got that mind reading machine sort of nice, warming up nicely. So what is rocks?
So rocks are kind of each quarter, each team works on a theme or several themes, several rocks. So these are kind of bigger projects that everyone works together as a team. So these are tasks that we will prioritize during that quarter. For example, the trip design team this quarter worked on the checklists and worked on reviewing some of their processes. And it's something that they'll kind of all work on together and then individually on specific tasks. And so by the end of the quarter, they'll have a much smoother process.
So we've been testing that. We've been testing that for the first time this quarter. Rocks, because what was the muddiness that we noticed?
Well, there's just, as a company that's, you know, fairly new but growing very quickly, there's just a lot of things to do. And each kind of team and person can identify different priorities according to just, many different things. And so it's easy to get lost and not be able to prioritize. And so just having a goal, an end goal. So instead of having, you know, five projects that are going to last you maybe 6 months, let's define, you know, three or four that you can do in 3 months, and you have an end date, you have a goal at the end of that quarter, and that's the priority. So the tricky part is usually the rocks aren't kind of your main day-to-day role. And so being able to prioritize that with all, you know, with other tasks is really important.
Totally. We're getting feedback from the team that they weren't quite sure what the priorities were and stuff like that. And so having rocks has helped. But you mentioned themes, and so I'm gonna jump on this for a little bit. So I heard a quote, I think back in April, May. I read it was on LinkedIn or something, that someone said a company should only have one priority at any time. Well, one major priority, because at that time I was setting like two or three priorities any time. And when I first heard it, I resisted it. And I was like, okay, let's lean in on this. Like, what would be the priority? And then it came to me within seconds. Like, our priority had to be getting gardening going. So gardening is a process of continuous improvement. And you might remember that I set that as the theme for that next quarter. I said, it's going to be gardening. Because the process of continuous improvement, we were struggling a little bit. People were struggling to understand why. Like, what counts as improvement on a process, and what counts as just me doing admin? Or when should I do it? And how serious is it really? And if I'm having a really busy day, do I do it and just let my customers hang or whatever, right? So people, there was a bit of struggle, right? There was a bit of lack of flow, you might say, in getting it rolling. But I set it as a theme and I clarified it is the highest priority. Even if it means customers have to wait, we're going to prioritize this because this investment means that while customers might have to wait now, well, I guess might have to wait now, I should say, in a year's time, it means that no one has to wait. Because our processes are so well done. So we're trading a little bit of ooze now for a lot less ooze in the future. And so this idea of quarterly themes has really, really helped. What's the theme for this quarter?
The next quarter?
This one that we're in right now.
Rowing together.
So rowing together, and the reason that the theme is rowing together is because I've noticed as we're growing, we've hit a point where we're roughly, I think, 18, 19, 20 people actually. I'm not one of those people who like keeps a constant running count in my mind of exactly how many. Like, we've got some amazing team members. I just don't know the exact, you know, metric exact volume numbers. Of it. Well, yeah. Oh, I don't know the number of it. I don't know the metric volume of it either. Yeah. I don't know the sum total of their ages. All I know is that we have a wonderful team. And what we've discovered is that there's a little bit of ooze creeping in due to variance in process, right? Mm-hmm. Different people doing their own role in different ways. Now, everyone has been doing a good job, which is kind of weird because, like, what's the problem? But the problem is if you go on holiday and you have your own custom way of doing the job, then it makes it really hard for someone to step in and figure out what you're doing, what you've been doing. Or if you're getting overwhelmed, it makes it super hard for someone to come in and pitch in and help you. Mm-hmm. Because you have to spend 45 minutes explaining where your information is located.
Right.
And so we realize that rowing together is really critical for the business. If we're going to keep on growing, it's going to cause a significant break on our growth if we don't have standardization, at least to a level, in a lot of our process. So we've been rolling it out, and the team has been embracing it. And another benefit that's come from this that we've kind of discovered is that through the proactive act of mapping some of our processes, we've been discovering ooze that we weren't expecting to discover, right? And this is actually another way to resolve muddiness. So muddiness is, you can resolve muddiness by understanding that there might be kind of hidden oozes, like you said, below the deck. You have to kind of pull up those floor, the planks in the deck to discover it, right? So you have to go on this like plank pulling upping exercise,
right,
to see where the ooze is. And so the first two, errors and time, you can get there just through simple passive observation. But to resolve the muddiness ooze, you often have to get there by doing proactive observation and auditing to actually discover what the ooze is and where it is. And that's one way to discover it. So you were just about to say?
Yeah, I think that's a good point because I think project managers or sometimes operations can feel that muddiness is just solved with SOPs. And that's not true because, well, in our case, our SOPs, like, they're constantly evolving because, you know, things change really quickly. But then also, you know, sometimes people just do things according to when they were trained. If things were done a year ago in a certain way, then that's how kind of they continue doing it. Or if, you know, there's just so many variants. And it could be even understanding things differently. Like, you know, you can read the same message in many different ways. And so that's another maybe struggle with remote communication, which is sometimes there can be muddiness in communication, in unclear communication.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I think it's not just as easy as, oh, you know, make sure everyone's read the SOPs or make sure that everyone's read this, you know, process. It's how is it understood? Does it actually work for each process? Does it work for each person? You know, sometimes there's things that are different, that they're done differently for a reason. So it takes actually quite a bit of digging to kind of get through the mud. It's not just, we don't want to just kind of slap a solution on top of the mud.
Totally. Yeah, totally. Absolutely. So those are the first three oozes. And I was talking to Lisa from our team. So Lisa's our lead trip designer. I was talking to her the other day that it could be a fun exercise actually to get everyone on the team to spend a week just paying attention to their local environment. They get everyone to bring one ooze to a team meeting and talk about how they found it. We actually and I was sorry that you weren't able to make it, Natalia, but, you know, being on the opposite side of the planet has its challenges, but we did an Australian team meetup, right? So everyone on the Australian team came to Melbourne for a meetup. And what was interesting was that they were telling me that they were seeing ooze. Like, they're going to a shop and they're seeing issues and seeing ooze, and they're gradually developing their ooze goggles, which is really cool. It is really cool because once you have the ooze goggles on.
I think, too, something that I'm sure we'll talk about it in another podcast, but I think doing all of this and offering the best experience possible for our team, our guests, our suppliers, anyone we encounter, candidates in a hiring process, adds an extra kind of challenge to all of this, because the idea of eliminating errors, waste of time, confusion, muddiness, and any of the other oozes we'll talk about, it's not just to be more efficient. It's, well, I think there's a lot of different reasons, right? It's to allow people to have a nicer experience with their job, to allow people to be more creative in their job so that there's more time and possibility to do that. You're not just kind of struggling through issues. There's just so many different things, really, but it's not just efficiency. It's not just let's get things done faster, because I think that would actually be in our priorities. Maybe, I don't want to say bottom, but it's not first priority. The first priority is how do we clear up some of the mess, some of the ooh, some of the guck, so that we can all do a better job.
And that's a really good point.
Everyone has a better experience.
Yeah, you have to. That's a really good point. Like, coming back to the ultimate goals of this, it's not about efficiency, right? And actually, this is actually something that I was meaning to raise about the third great ooze that you've helped me remember, is that you can ask, like, you can figure out what clarifying questions might look like. So one clarifying question that could help you identify ooze, you might say to yourself, what if the world's best salesperson was to analyze our sales process?
Right.
Right. Or you can read books to help you uncover stuff. And you say, okay, what would the author of this book say if he got to spend, if she got to spend 72 hours looking at our business? And sometimes you can just put on someone else's hat. Or, like you said, put on the hat of the ideal world, right? My ideal world involves us. We don't want to just work. We're in an industry that's meant to be fun, right?
Right.
And it's meant to be creative. And so how do we create an environment where creativity naturally arises?
Which is really interesting, because when I do interviews, when we're hiring, frequently people who have travel industry experience don't describe their previous work as fun. They describe work.
And the opposite. They describe it as the opposite. Yeah.
Extremely stressful, and like, they kind of promote it more of like, I endured the stress. I'm valuable because I endured. You know?
And yeah, so it's true. Or because, like, the way the companies get rid of the great ooze is they stomp out every last drop of creativity out of their teams, right? They turn them into robots, like they do it in Qantas by the airline, right?
Sure.
They turn them into meat machines.
And
that's what it feels like.
I think even for us, like, hiring, just having people not feel like another number on a sheet is a really, really big deal. Where I don't want to get too existential, but that, I feel that's a bit sad.
It is sad. Well, that's actually, you're bumping up into accidentally describing one of the other oozes, so we have to be careful. But we will be talking about this. We will talk about this, because the ultimate goal is for us to, I don't know if it's the ultimate goal, but a really key factor here is we're trying to all express our potential, right?
It's important because it's also a North Star in decision-making and in eliminating these issues. It's not just what's, you know, wasted time. You know, a call center could say, well, our agents spend way too much time on the phone, and so we're going to cut that time so they can only spend, I don't know, like 7 minutes on the phone. But that doesn't align with our North Star. That doesn't align with what kind of our end goal. And so we need to cut that wasted time in other ways, because the ooze is not that phone call.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a wonderful point. If you take specifically just the phone calls, the errors that are happening on other phone calls are probably leading to completely unnecessary phone calls, right? In terms of second, third, fourth, right? So if you knock errors out, you get rid of all that. So now you have more time spent on the phone, and then you have people calling because of waiting, right? They've been waiting for 15 days for a document to arrive, so they're calling, or they're having an error on their bill, so they're calling, right? What's the other one? They're confused because the bills don't make sense, or a letter they've received doesn't make sense, right? So they're calling, right? So much of, so like if you think about a call center or a call center trying to like hack away at every single last minute. Like that guaranteed is not like they've lost all perspective.
Right.
So if they're actually doing root cause analysis, knocking out the ooze, they would be in a much better place. All right, we're up to 49 minutes or so once editing is done. But Natalia, thank you for joining. Would you be open to doing a second conversation to go through our second three oozes? Our second set of oozes.
I feel like we've already done an intro to like five podcast episodes, so I feel like I'm wrapped in.
We're opening all these loops and we've got to suck people into our vortex. You thought you were listening to a podcast episode. You will never leave. By the time people are done, they're going to have done 15 years of certification to get through all the way.
Thank you, and I'm sorry.
Thank you for listening. It'll be worth your time. All right. Well, cool. All right. We'll see you next time. Thank you, Natalia.
Thanks, Matt.